ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। अजानुलंबित भुजौकनकावदात संकीर्तनैकपितरौकमलाय दक्षविश्वंभरो द्विजवरो युगधर्मपाल वंदे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतार यन्तः प्रविश्य मम वाचमिमं प्रसूक्तुं संजीवयत किल शक्तिधरस्वदाम्न अन्यांश्च हस्तचरणाश्रवणापगादिं प्रणाम नमो भगवते पुरुषाय तुभ्यम्। गुड इवनिंग। So I wanted to have a little continuation of our talk the other evening. I was talking the other day about the importance of the mind and clarity and purity of the mind. The mind is playing the central role in our life, and I mentioned briefly six factors out of ten which can in a very serious way affect our mind. And I mentioned that there are ten altogether, and among four which I didn't mention was a very essential element, and I want to devote this little talk tonight to this particular item, that is mantra. The four remaining items which very much affect our consciousness and influence our mind in regards of the modes of material nature, sattva-guna, raja-guna and tamaguna, goodness, passion and ignorance. One is janma. Janma means basically your genealogy, your birth, but also means your initiation. Mantra, dhyan, your meditation, and samskara, the different rituals which you perform. But I will not touch the three other items. I will only talk about mantra. And you're all familiar with mantras. Every evening here we chant mantra. Every morning there is chanting going on. Sometimes there is sound of Gayatri mantra here, Om Bhur Bhuvah Svah. And when in the morning there is a chanting, they chant my mantra for Ganesh, Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha. Or they chant mantra, Mahamrityunjaya mantra, mantra which is supposed to deliver you from death, mantra which has a great medicinal effect and which can supposedly, if you attain perfection in this mantra, cure all the diseases. So what I want to talk tonight is how it works, what is the mechanism behind it, what kind of mantras are there? Why do you need to repeat mantras so many times? Why it's not enough just to chant it once and be happy? You know, and that's it. What is this, tedious repetition of the same thing again and again and again? And ultimately, we will practice a little bit, and we will try to observe the effect of the mantras upon our consciousness. So that's the presentation of my topic for tonight. I will speak about the mechanism of mantra or sound vibration. First of all, the definition, the very word mantra means it has two verbal roots, man and tra. Tra means triate, it means to protect or to deliver. And man means mind. The English word man also comes from the Sanskrit root man. Man means to think, to contemplate, to meditate. So the very word mantra in Sanskrit means something which protects your mind. This is the most simple meaning. Mananat trayate yasmat iti mantra parikirtitah. Mantra is something which protects your mind from the tendency to dissipate the energy of the mind in different directions. This tendency is called mananat. Mananat means that we always think about something, and there are hundreds and thousands of subjects upon which we dwell. When Maharaja Yudhishthira in Mahabharata was asked, what is there in a big quantity more than the blades of grass? You know, if you look around, you will see there is plenty of blades of grass. So he was asked, what is there more numerous in this universe than the blades of grass? And he says, thoughts in our mind. The thoughts in our mind constantly crossing mind and affecting mind. And moreover, as I said, the mind is a very vulnerable element of our nature. It's constantly bombarded by the external influences. You know, if we go through the city, we will get so much different information without even noticing it. And it will all affect our mind. The mind will be affected one way or another. So, because of this constant onslaught, constant attack on our mind from the external sources, especially now, you know, we're living in this world where there is internet, and when there is mobile phones, and when there is advertisement and TV and whatnot. You know, here they may, you know, our kind doctors may try to create healing conducive environment. But ultimately, the healing depends on the mind. And if the mind is still bombarded by all this information, which to a greater extent carry very negative energy. A lot of negative energy is coming in our mind from the external environment. Then all this, you know, all these measures which our kind doctors are trying to have to protect us will not work. So what I want to say is that we need the protection of the mind. And as I said, mananat trayate, something which protects us from this tendency to dissipate the energy of our mind. When we have different thoughts which are kind of tearing us apart, taking us in different directions, that's very detrimental for the functioning of the mind and for the functioning of our whole system. And mantra is something which helps us to tune up the mind, to make the mind more concentrated, and in this way it protects the mind from all these dissipating agents which attack our mind constantly. And how it works? It works in a very brilliant way. Ultimately, we know, if we study quantum physics or the modern physics, we will know that the basis of everything which we have, which we see, and which we are ultimately, is the sound, is the wave. When I speak about sound, I basically speak about the wave. And in the Vedas, in Sankhya philosophy, upon which, by the way, Ayurveda is also based. Ayurveda is based on very firmly on this basis of Sankhya philosophy. In Sankhya philosophy, it is said that the first element, the first material element, the element of creation, was sound in ether. And it basically means wave. There was nothing, there was just ether, which means space. Ka. Ka means space in Sanskrit. And in this ether, there was waves. And these waves ultimately took shape of everything which we see. What we see around us is nothing but a solid form of the sound, or solid form of the waves. And this is confirmed by the modern physics. The modern physics, when they went deep into the foundation of the matter, they found the same fact, that the basis of all creation is the wave function. In quantum physics, if you want to describe something, ultimately, whatever it is, it can be this or this, you ultimately can draw a wave function which would accurately describe this particular object of reality. So this fact, even though it's a modern discovery, ultimately it was known long ago to the seers of the past, who are creators of the very culture. And therefore, from the very beginning, sound played the most important role in the Vedic culture. If we compare Western culture, which is more or less stemming from Greek culture, and Vedic culture, we will see the striking difference. In ancient Greece, the most important science was geometry. And geometry is the science of the form. How the forms are interrelated with each other. You know, in the Academy of Plato, there was a slogan: those who don't know geometry shouldn't enter here. They are ignorant fools. They don't know anything. So, but as much as in the West, the stress, the emphasis was given to the form, to the shape, and we see all this video culture. Our culture is basically very much based on the video, the images. The Vedic culture, in the same way, is firmly based on sound, and sound only. It's a sonic culture, the culture where the correct sound was the most important element of culture. And I will explain now what is correct sound. As I said, there are primordial sounds which are very important, and these primordial sounds, they're the basis of the whole creation. In the Vedas, it's very interestingly, the process of creation is explained in a very beautiful and ingenious way. Of course, in the West, we have also in the New Testament the statement that in the beginning there was a word. It basically means the same. The beginning of creation is the word. Word means sound, the wave. But in the Vedas, it is explained how all the objects are created. It is said that it was God who named these objects. And by naming these objects, he created these objects. First, there was a sound or the word, and the word, which is very closely interconnected with the meaning, created the object. So according to Vedic philosophy, there is no difference on a deeper level between the sound and the object, between the sound and the meaning. Ultimately, originally, from our past, we know that there was only one language. And this one language correctly describes the reality. Interestingly enough, that quite recently there was an interesting article published by NASA. And this article was about Sanskrit. And in this article, it was said that the Sanskrit is the only one natural language existing in this planet, in this culture, in this universe, which correctly and very scientifically reflects the reality with all its interconnections, with all its different interrelationship. And therefore they say that the Sanskrit will be... there are artificial languages which are used for computers to, you know, to make the model of reality in the computer and the computer logic. But the NASA says that Sanskrit will be the language for the computers of the fourth and fifth generation. Now we have third generation of computer, which is toys. So they say that for the more advanced computers, Sanskrit will be used. Why? Because Sanskrit is the language which, again, correctly reflects in a sonic form, in a sonic presentation, the reality which is there. And it is said in the Vedas, I started explaining this process of creation, where God would be going and saying, this is the word, and the word, the object would, like it is said in the Bible, in the New Testament, you know, that God said, not in New Testament, in the Old Testament, he said, the God said light, and there was light. So basically the same mechanism, the same creation, the same process is described in Vedas, as it's said in Sanskrit, I am Shabda, I am Artha, Bodhavyam. And we know what is expressed in this Vedic statement is that when God created something, he called it, and we know that to use something, to make use of any object of this world, we have to call it. If we wouldn't call, this is the first thing which we do. If we create something new, we call it. And let's say, just imagine that, you know, all the new inventions which are there, computer, this recorder, this video camera, would not be called in specific names. We would not be able to use them, you know, we would say just, you know, this, you know, it would lose its usage, its practicality to a greater extent. So the same kind of things is expressed in this understanding. And basically what I'm trying to explain is that, and this is the foundation of Vedic culture, if you will be able to pronounce correct sounds, sounds which are coming from this original sound created by God, you will be able to influence reality in a very profound way. The Vedic culture was about this, how to pronounce the sound of the mantra in such a way that it will have a very deep effect on you and effect on external reality. We know there are so many stories when, you know, somebody gives a curse. And this curse works. How it works? Because that was a powerful sound. Another translation of word mantra, mantra is a powerful sound or sound which has potency. And I will explain how it works so that we can practice it. So, you know, if for example, you know, of course, we know that if somebody curses us, it may have some effect, but it may or may not have some effect. You may curse the whole world, but probably will not have much effect on the world. Or somebody can bless the blessings also. You know, we know from the past, somebody blesses you, and the blessings is being realized. It's actualized. It's becoming reality. How it works, again, because of the purity of the sound. So, basically how mantras work, mantras are based, it is said that rishis, the seers of the past, they're called rishis, and rishi literally means seer, somebody who can see. Rishi, the very word rishi is coming from the verbal root. Somebody who can see, rishi means the seer who can see. So the rishis of the past, the sages of the past, they have seen mantras. Mantras or the sound have shape. And rishis, the seers, they are called rishis because they were able to see these mantras, or they were able to see how the you know, the sound and the shape are interrelated with each other. Ultimately, these mantras are coming from our chakras. You probably know that there are seven chakras, and these chakras have a graphic representation. The chakras are vortexes of energy. And these vortexes of energy, they are, you know, they have a certain kind of, you know, rotation, and they have a certain shape. It's a certain energy, subtle energy, which, again, the yogis can see. So this subtle energy have certain shape, and each shape has a certain sound. They have a petals. If you will take any, you know, book on yoga or on these chakras, you will see the shapes. The Muladhara chakra, the first chakra, has four petals. And in each petal, you will have a Sanskrit sound. Each petal will have a certain potent sound, which, if pronounced properly, will take you into the resonance with this particular chakra. And if you pronounce this, you will be able to strengthen this center of energy. That's basically how mantra work on a subtle level. All these sounds, when they're pronounced correctly, they enter into your system. And they start interacting with the system which is there on a subtle level, and they start purifying the system. Not only the mind is being purified, but the whole system of your energy is being purified. We have, you know, so many so-called nadis. These nadis, it's the channels, subtle channels within our body upon which, you know, the energy flows. In Chinese culture, they are very much into these nadis, into these channels, through which the prana is flowing. So each sound in Sanskrit, if pronounced correctly, purifies certain nadi, certain channel in your body, and helps the energy to flow. Purifies the energy, helps the energy to flow, raises the level of your energy, and so many different effects are there. So that's how basically mantras work. But they only work if you pronounce the sound correctly. And therefore, mantras have to be practiced again and again and again by repeating these mantras and by going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into this sound. Ultimately, this repetition of the mantras or chanting of the mantras means that you are going with your mind on a deeper levels of the sound. There is a external or very kind of gross level of the sound. When I speak, it's a very gross level of the sound, but even this gross level of the sound has an effect. But Veda said that there are four levels of the sound. The gross level is only one level, very external and very gross. And it has an effect, but this effect is somewhat primitive, so to speak. But there is more subtle sound, the sound of our thoughts. You know, what are our thoughts? Thoughts are just sound. You know, just something is constantly speaking something. And this is sound on the most subtle level. There is sound on the level of intellect, which is called Pashyanti Vak. Pashyanti means something which is seen, which can be seen. So on a deeper level, the sound has the form or shape, or it has some certain image. And there is the most profound level of the sound, which is called Paravak, which is transcendental level of the sound. So by repeating the mantras, we are going deeper and deeper and deeper into the level of the sound, so that ultimately, on a deeper level, we will meet the object of this sound. When you repeat in the morning, I've seen it in a very, you know, it's a very touching scene. And you repeat Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha. ultimately, if you achieve the perfection of this mantra, you will see Ganapati face to face in this sound, because this sound is not different from him. And the repetition of this mantra is meant to reach certain level of reality which is not accessible to us now. We are living in a very superficial world and a very superficial kind of reality. So mantra is the means by which you tune up your consciousness. And by tuning up your consciousness, tuning up your mind, you will be able to penetrate into a deeper level of levels of reality and discover the amazing things which are there in the deeper levels of reality. So that's how mantras work, and there is a very beautiful comparison, metaphor, which explains what happens when you repeat mantras again and again and again. Like every evening we chant Maha Mantra, and I will speak a little bit about Maha Mantra at the end. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare. So the comparison of chanting the mantra, this comparison is comparing chanting the mantra with an Ayurvedic process. Somehow or other, the presence of our doctors inspired me into this, Ayurvedic analogies. There is an Ayurvedic process which is called Kajalikaran. This is the process by which you take mercury, and mercury is very poisonous, and turn mercury into a medicine. By this Kajalikaran process, you take mercury and turn mercury into Makaradvaja, or in some very powerful Ayurvedic medicine which can have a very profound effect on your body. So it starts with taking sulfur together with mercury and trying to how you call it?
Marana.
That's
Shodhana and Marana.
Yeah, whatever. You just take the pestle and
mix it.
Yeah, you try to mix it up again and 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 again, chanting certain mantras and doing some certain things. So basically what is happening in this process, two separate objects, mercury, which is not mixing with anything, you have seen this mercury, and sulfur, which is also quite a passive object, by stirring or by mixing, by kind of again and again and again doing this, they become one. So what is happening when you chant mantra, the same thing is happening with your mind. Now our mind is material, and this material mind has certain vibrations, and it's basically all based on these vibrations, on the waves. And, so many thoughts, vibrations in the mind are coming. But we take mantra, which is a powerful vibration, seen by the seers of the past, and transmitted to us, and it's very important, it should be transmitted to us by the guru through his pure consciousness. You have to receive a mantra from the mind or from the mouth of your guru. And then you repeat it again and again and again. And it's as if you are trying to mix mercury with sulfur. And you will see when you do this process, your mind, which is like mercury, will try to, run away. If you try to do something with the mercury, can you do something with the mercury? No. Mercury will be just, you cannot catch mercury. In the same way, you cannot catch mind. Mind is very difficult to catch. But if you do it again and again and again, and if you have certain passions in this process, by repeating it again and again and again and again and again and again, ultimately, the sound, very powerful sound of mantra, becomes one with the mind. The mind becomes tuned up with this vibration, and only at this moment you will be able to penetrate the deeper levels of reality. You are more or less connecting yourself through this process with this vibrational dimension of our reality, and so many different things you will be able to get through this particular process. So that's why we repeat mantra, and repeating mantras also requires certain purification process. It's purification in itself, but it helps if you at the same time purify your living and everything else, to help this process. What I want to say is that it's a very profound yoga. We know that yoga, the very word yoga means connection. And by chanting this mantra, you're connecting yourself in a very powerful way. But for this process to be successful, you need to fulfill certain conditions. And one of the conditions is, I already mentioned, very important condition is that you have to get the mantra from your guru. The mantra will be effective only if you get it from the pure consciousness. As I said, this purity of the sound is most important. If the sound is not pure, the effect is less. Sound is a very funny thing, The other day, this lady came to me and she said that, I feel a little shy to repeat what she said, but to illustrate my point, I wanted to repeat. She said, "You said something which I heard many times before, but I didn't believe it. But when you said it, somehow it made sense." So what I want to say by giving this example is that sound, you may hear the same sound many times before, and it may not have any effect on your consciousness whatsoever. And then all of a sudden somebody says to you something which you have heard so many times, and the whole world changes to you. You somehow or other, in this particular sound, you find the new reality which was not, known or accessible to you before. Why? It's because the sound carries the influence of the consciousness by which it's pronounced. It's the same sound. And therefore it is said that it's absolutely useless to write down Vedas. It just doesn't work. People in the West, they study Vedas for 200 years, and they're very proud. There was Max Müller who studied Vedas, and he knew Vedas. It doesn't work. It just does not work. Because the knowledge which is there in the Vedas is much more subtle, and you have to receive it in the form of the sound from your guru who has realized it. And by receiving it, and you can receive it in the form of very short sentence, just one sentence, mantra. And in this mantra, the whole universe will be contained. The whole most profound knowledge will be contained, and you, by repeating this mantra, you will ultimately come to the same level of realization. And if you just read it in the book, it will have zero effect. Like this Gayatri mantra. Now Gayatri mantra is very cheap. Gayatri mantra, any pop singer is singing Gayatri mantra. And people think that just by hearing this Gayatri mantra from some pop singer, you will get some effect. Forget it. There will be no effect. If you want to achieve the effect, and Gayatri mantra is one of the most powerful mantras in the whole of the Vedas. Gayatri mantra is called Vedamata. Vedamata means the whole Vedas, everything is coming from the Gayatri. And Gayatri is explaining the ultimate reality. Gayatri is the explanation of sound vibration, the code of the ultimate reality which is there. But if you get it from the pop singer, you may, I don't know what you will get from this. You'll probably get some contamination with this sound. You know, you will not get any knowledge or anything else. So what I want to say is that it's extremely important. The purity of the sound is extremely important, and therefore the mantras may or may not have effect upon our consciousness. You know, so many mantras now, we're living in the age of information where everything is available on the internet. You look in the internet, all the secret mantras of the Vedas are there on the first front page of some site. You know, no problem, no secrets are there. But still, secrets are there. All these secret mantras will not work if you receive it through improper channel. There is some certain code which is there. Why? Because there will be no certain level, required level of purity. And this is especially true in case of Vedic mantras. In case of Vedic mantras, there is such a high requirements for the correct pronunciation. For the first, 10 years, the child in the Gurukul and traditional educational system was taught how to pronounce the sounds properly. You know, the Shiksha is the first, the phonetics, the science of phonetics, you know, where you pronounce the proper sound, the correct sound, so that it would be effective. So in our world, it doesn't work. Of course, we know there is this beautiful drama play of Bernard Shaw, Pygmalion, you know, about the very gross lady who was very, you know, very crude, gross lady who was selling some flowers, and how she became transformed. Why? Because of the sound. This English teacher started to teach her the Queen's English. And she started speaking with the Queen's English, and she became a queen. So this play explains or describes the same kind of process. If you correctly pronounce certain things, it will have a very profound effect on your consciousness. And in the Vedas, of course, you know, this was the emphasis. But, as I said, it doesn't work in our case. Big relief. Just doesn't work. Don't even try. It's practically not possible. You have to start it from the very early age. You have to maintain certain purity of your consciousness. You have to fulfill so many conditions for this to work. So the Vedic mantras as such, we may get some effect, but we have to understand, or we have to agree, or have to admit from the very beginning, from the outset, that the effect will be limited. It's very difficult to attain what is called in Sanskrit mantra siddhi. Mantra siddhi means the perfection of mantra, which basically means meeting of the object of the mantra face to face. But that was a bad news. The good news is coming. The good news is that even though Vedic mantras, which have a particular structure, is very difficult to achieve perfection in our case, still there are some other mantras which are called moksha mantras, which are much more powerful and which have much lower conditions for the success. So I will speak very briefly about these two kinds of mantras, then we'll give few practical advice if somebody wants to practice this, and then we will have little practice. So the Vedic mantras, they have a particular structure. They start with Bija mantra. Om, Gam, Klim, Shrim. And It's this Bija mantra which is the most essential. Bija mantra, if you achieve perfection in Bija mantra, you will have tremendous power. Bija mantra, it's one sound which is corresponding to certain chakras which we have, and it really contains in itself tremendous amount of energy if you pronounce it correctly. So all the Vedic mantras, they start with this bija, one syllable which contains certain energies, certain subtle energy, and it's more or less the code of this reality with which you want to connect. It's a code like city code or country code. If you call, you first have to know the code. And if you know the code correctly, you may connect with a particular man in this country. But you first have to know the code. So, and then there is a word in dative, in the fourth case in Sanskrit, Ganapataya, Ramaya, Krishnaya, Vasudevaya, or Vishnave, Gurave. This is the fourth case in Sanskrit, dative. And Namaha or Svaha at the end. Om Gam Gamanapataye Namaha. Namaha means I am coming out from my own consciousness, from my ego, and I'm surrendering to this particular deity. Namaha means I'm denying, it's a self-denial at the end. It's basically the word which means that I offer my respect, but offering respects means that I'm denying myself and I'm surrendering to this deity. You know, we know that this is the mudra, or the how we show this respect, or we bow down. And basically, we are more or less coming out from our ego and connecting with this deity. And this is how the, you know, Vedic, all the Vedic mantras, they have the same structure. Bija, the word, the name of the particular deity, and Svaha or Namaha means relationship. I'm coming from myself for him, to him. And it's somewhat formal. What I want to say, please, this is very important part of what I want to say. The very structure of Vedic mantras implies certain level of formality. It's a very formal relationship, and therefore it requires very high conditions to be fulfilled. Very proper consciousness in which you pronounce this, very correct pronunciation, very kind of, you know, formal relationship. In a formal relationship, you have to know many things. You know, if you go to some formal gathering, you really have to know how to move, you know, how to move your eyebrows, or, you know, how to, what intonations you have to use, what will be offensive, what will be not offensive. You know, it's not informal gathering how we have now. And you have to, you know, pronounce certain words you cannot say there, it will be very offensive. So in the same way, mantras, you know, Vedic mantras, they are about this, about some very formal, highly structured relationship. And therefore, it's difficult. It's really difficult to use them or to achieve success in them. But as I said, there are powerful mantras which are more suitable to our situation, our condition, which we have. And these mantras are much less formal. And these mantras are more or less simply the names. You know, in a case of some formal relationship, you may have to know some things, and you have to know how to approach certain person, and you have to follow certain etiquette. But if you are in a desperate condition, and you're really desperate, you just, you know, if you see somebody, you just call him and you don't care about the etiquette, you know. You're drowning in a river, you know, you're not conscious about the etiquette. You're just calling, hey! And this hey may not be so polite, but it works. You know, it definitely has an effect because, you know, you're calling in less formal way somebody whom you know will come to you to help. These moksha mantras, or powerful mantras, which are most suitable for our condition, are contained from the names of God in vocative case. As I said, formal Vedic mantras, they also contain names of God. But the names of God are contained in a dative case. But the moksha mantras, powerful mantras, contain names of God in vocative case when you just want to get his attention by all means. If you're just calling somebody, you know, you're trying to get his attention. And when we chant Hare Krishna, we're basically calling God, hey, come to me, save me. Therefore, they're called moksha mantras, mantras which gives you liberation. This particular mantra which we chant, which is prominent in our tradition, is called Maha Mantra, which is called Great Mantra. Great chanting for the liberation of the mind. And it is, of course, there in the Vedas, in Kali Santaran Upanishad, in one of the Upanishads, it's quoted there. And it is said, in this Upanishad it is said, Narada is approaching Brahma, and Brahma is saying, you know, this dark age of Kali is coming. It's very dark. The consciousness of people are very dark. It's ridden by all kinds of, you know, bad energy. The negative energy is so much prevalent in this world. How people can be saved from this abyss of negative energy? This age in which we are living is just, it's a very difficult time, because there is so much impurity, and this impurity is more or less the norm of the present day society. So how do we help? And Narada is asking Brahma, the creator of this world, how do we help? How people can be saved from this condition, from this pollution of this age? The pollution of this age is not only in plastic. Dr. Ram Kumar the other day said that there are so many chemicals which are produced, millions and millions of chemicals which create the cancer in our body, have cancerogenic effect in our body. But this is just a little part of the whole, this is just the top of the iceberg of the pollution which is there. You know, all this chemicals, they're polluting everything. They're already polluted. You know, all these vibrations which are there, they also pollute everything. In a much more subtle and much more profound way. So much pollution is there everywhere. So therefore, this question was asked in the Upanishad, how people can be saved? What is the mantra? What is the protection for the mind? Which vibration can protect your mind in this desperate condition? And it is explained there that if you chant this mantra, this Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, this particular mantra will give the protection to your mind. Why? Because, as I said, it's a totally, completely informal. It's a desperate cry. It's all invocative. Hare is the name of God. Krishna is the name of God. Hari means the one who liberates you for everything unwanted, for all the undesirable, all the pollution which is there, which is accumulated in your mind. You just say once Hare and it's gone. He will take it. We're more or less desperately crying to him, please take away all this dirt which is there, all this pollution which is there, all the contamination which is there. And this is what the name Hari means. Hari means God who is liberating us from this contamination. And Krishna means the most attractive, the most beautiful. The very word Krishna means the somebody who attracts everyone. And that's the non-sectarian definition of God. God is, by the very definition, is the source of everything. And whatever we need is in Him. Therefore, He is the most attractive. And Ram means the one who gives the supreme pleasure, supreme bliss, supreme joy in our heart, Rama. So this mantra contains of these three powerful names of God in a certain pattern, and therefore it is so liberating. Therefore it's called Moksha Mantra, Mantra for Liberation. And as I promised, we're finishing now. I'm really sorry for being so long in the presentation. But I hope it was helpful. I wanted to give some practical advice, but I don't know if I can now. But as I said, all this practical advice are not that important if you chant the moksha mantras, the powerful mantras. For the mantras of Vedic mantras, which are more or less mantras for meditation, you need to fulfill many, many, many conditions. Like, for example, your posture has to be perfect. You know, your spine has to be completely erect in a very correct way. You have to have your spine, because there is no meditation without the correct posture. All the meditation without correct posture is just a, not even a joke, it's just absurd. It's a nonsense. First of all, you have to have proper, complete alignment of your body. Then only meditation can take place. So, as I said, all these formalities, and then, you know, you have to have proper place. Place have to be pure, you know, the proper time. It's very important to chant it in the proper time. The time before dawn, before sunrise is very important. This is all conditions for the success of mantra in every case. But, as I said, for moksha mantras, it's not that important. Posture, you may be laying down after taking half a liter of ghee and chanting this mantra, and it will still work, you know, even though your spine may not be correct. Because, again, there is a certain condition which is already, or certain kind of situation which is already built in the mantra itself. So it's for desperate condition. And you can chant it in any condition, whatever you like. But anyway, let's try certain mantras. We will take 2-3 more minutes, okay? Mm-hmm. You are still awake?
Yeah.
Yeah. So first we will start with Om, of course. Om, it is said that this is the primordial sound, the sound of creation. That the very first sound of creation is there in Om. And it is still there. They say, like, for example, if you start puja, people usually they blow conchal, and the sound of conchal is the sound of Om. It's a correct sound of Om. But let's try to do it properly. As I said, this bija mantras, it's a bija, it's the most powerful bija which is there, the most powerful syllable which is there. As I said, and purity is very important, the purity of pronunciation is very important. So let's try to do it as properly as possible. It's contained of three words, or three sounds, A, U, M. And A, U, together they give you O. So no need to do A, U, and M. You can just say O. But the sound O has to be twice as long as nasal sound at the end, which is explained as M, but it's actually nasal sound, how you call it, some vibration, some nasal vibration. So the very sound Om contains of four parts: A, U, M, and Bindu. If you saw the diagram of Om, there is a dot over it. This dot is called Bindu, and it basically means silence at the end, which is most important. If you pronounce Om properly, there has to be 1/4 of the time of silence. And this silence is the continuation of the sound by which you go to the higher realms of reality. So let's try it together with me. First, we will try in a proper way. Let's try to relax first. You sit as properly as possible, because as I said, it's important for this kind of mantras to have a proper posture. Make your spine erect. It's also important that the neck on the same straight line as the spine. And first, just simply observe your breathing. When we take the position of the observer, the relaxation takes place on its own. If we start observing our breathing, we will feel how the body and especially the face becomes relaxed. There's many little muscles on our face, and if we observe our breathing or make deep breathing while observing it, we will feel the relaxation coming to the body and coming to the mind. The main thing is that to create a very relaxed atmosphere in the mind. We will have few deep breathes. Inhale, exhale, and just observe on your own. And now try to concentrate your mind on the external sounds, on all these sounds of nature which are there. It will also help you to relax. Now you make we'll start chanting. You make a deep breath. Again. Louder. You can open your eyes. Did you feel an effect on your consciousness? It has a very profound effect. And it's a very natural thing. It's a completely natural sound. It's the most natural sound which is there. But at the same time, if you, as they say, if you go deeper, the comparison which is given in Upanishad, it is said that the Om, the sound Om, will become like an arrow. You take your mind, and from your mind you tighten the string, and you release the arrow, and this arrow will reach the Supreme Reality through the sound Om. That's how it works. This metaphor is there to help you understand where your consciousness is taken by this sound, if you pronounce it properly. Okay, so what else shall we? We can try do this mantra which we chanted in the beginning, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. As I said, it is the mantra which is also describing the all-pervading presence of God. This mantra is a particular invocation to the presence of God, who is there in our heart, in our consciousness, everywhere. He is right there. He is not somewhere far away, not in a cloud. He has not forgotten about us. He's there. And we are invoking Him and His presence in our consciousness by pronouncing this Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Let's try it. Okay? Again, little relaxation. It always helps. And then first I will pronounce this mantra, and then you will do it as we did by this repetition, by this chanting. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
As I said, the particular reason for chanting these mantras is often specific, you know, like you chant mantra of a particular planet to get relief of this planet's influence or to get some blessings, like you chant, you know, Om Chandraya Namaha by chanting the mantra of the moon. And Chandra is there, moon is there in the sound Chandra, and if you pronounce it properly, ultimately you will get the connection with this. But as I said, you know, the most powerful mantra is this Hare Krishna. And at the end we will practice this mantra, and there will be also chanting afterwards, and you can practice this harmonium. But what we will try to do now, we will try together in unison to chant this mantra, You all know this mantra, right? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So what we will try, we will, few times, we will chant together this mantra in unison, but try to completely concentrate on the sound of this mantra. For concentration, the relaxation is very important. To concentrate the mind, the body and the mind have to be relaxed. Try to do it also in a very loud voice, because loud voice will help us to nullify or to erase, at least for the time being, some other thoughts which will distract our attention from the sound of mantra. So that's what we will do. Together, five times we will repeat this mantra in a very loud voice. And as I said, pronunciation doesn't matter. Just try to call, to invoke the presence of God through this mantra, because He is there in the name. We can take a deep breath. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare.
Okay. Pavan Prabhu said that kirtan, when we chant together, the effect of this chanting is much more powerful, because through the melody of the kirtan, can connect or concentrate on the sound of this mantra in a much more deeper way and deeper level. And also the melody contains certain emotions on its own accord, and it's easier to chant this mantra in a pure way, and therefore you can feel the effect of kirtan easier than just by chanting mantras on your own. Therefore kirtan is a very powerful practice of yoga, which help to purify the mind and somehow or other connect the mind with the higher reality. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.